a fully Christian way of talking about racism, right now on Catholic Answers Focus. Hey, hello and welcome. Focus is Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending the faith. We're glad you're here with us. Remember to subscribe to Focus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen, and you'll be notified then when new episodes are available. Please leave that 5-star rating as well. It really does help to grow the podcast. This week, everywhere there is talk of racism, and more than just talk, people are taking action, including taking to the streets and confronting one another there. Even within the church, one is getting a growing sense of rancor between people over how to deal with racism. So what does God have to say about racism? What does the Catholic Church and its traditions actually teach about racism? Did Jesus have anything to say about racism? There's actually very little mention of race in the Bible or in the theological traditions of the church. It's an issue that became really a forefront issue only in the 20th century, but that does not mean Christianity is neutral on the topic. As a matter of fact, far from being neutral, Christianity has the key language for understanding and overcoming racism. And so we turn to our good friend, Father Hugh Barber, to help us recover and discover a Christian language for addressing racism. So thank you for doing this conversation with us, Father Hugh. It seems like the greatest teacher in the world on sin is the sinless Lord himself. He knows more about it than anybody else. So I want to ask you, we know what, modern theory says about racism. We know what the founding fathers had to say about racism. We know all these, we know what William Wells Brown had to say about racism and all. But what does the Lord have to say about it?
Well, he did two things.
Okay.
First, he created human nature. Mm-hmm. And created us from the beginning, as was described in Genesis, to be of a common origin. Mm-hmm. We're all from the same origin as human beings, not just as creatures of God, but also as human beings by descendants from our first parents.
Okay.
And so there's a common origin for the whole human race. And you notice the word race there is used in the super generic term of that includes all the other races, so-called.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So first he created us out of nothing. Or out of nothing, but then also it says out of the slime of the earth, the body made from the elements. And so there's one rationale for an absolute human solidarity and equality in terms of common origin and descendancy. We're all one kind, created by God and declared good.
Okay.
Right, so that's one truth of our faith that's quite explicit. Then the second one is that having fallen into sin, in which we were even more equal,
right.
effects,
yeah.
He redeemed us from our sin by offering his own humanity, taken from Eve through Mary, for the salvation of the whole human race, of each and every one, shedding his precious blood. So our creation and our redemption are universally goods that are indicative of God's intentions for the human race, that we all are of one kind and we have one single destiny.
So
a common origin and a common destiny by the grace of God, made in God's image in the beginning, having fallen, being redeemed by God in the end, so that we might reach finally union with him in heaven. So that's the foundation of...
This is a very solid foundation,
right,
too.
A very solid foundation of any... Yeah. Catholic understanding of the question is like, how is a Catholic supposed to understand, or what are we supposed to understand by racism?
Racism then is contrary to the unity that God has created in us and the unity he has redeemed us into.
Right, exactly. It's contrary to the unity of the human race, and therefore it's an error against faith if you're a Catholic and you actually buy into
a race
theories, where you hold that certain persons, by reason of their race or ethnicity, are naturally inferior to you, or are not endowed with the same rights, or don't have the same destiny that you have.
Okay.
Well, then that's contrary to revealed faith. That means you're denying something that's part of the Catholic faith, and that goes all the more so for the redemption, where Christ dies for everyone and sheds his precious blood equally and for all.
Right.
And so consequently, every descendant of our first parents, everyone who shares that common human origin, is equal with regard to both creation and redemption. So that's...
So would this, like, just to, I mean, as a historical matter, say if you went to the apostles, would they have been open to every person of every color, for example, equally?
Certainly. I mean, St. Paul says, "In Christ is neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave or free."
Right.
And, of course, slavery in antiquity was not, strictly speaking, a race thing.
Or right.
It was partly in some parts of the Roman Empire. Because, for example, in Roman antiquity, and kids would like this in our country, the elementary teachers were household slaves. You know, you had a Greek-speaking, highly educated Greek-speaking person from Syria or someplace who was your slave, who taught your children, you know, grammar and the rudiments of education. So it was not based on race in the Roman Empire. But certainly the apostles made it very clear that the gospel was preached to, and our Lord made it clear, to all nations.
Yeah.
And they went to all nations.
Right.
They went through North Africa and farther down all the way to Ethiopia.
Right, like even Philip in the Bible.
They went, preaching the Ethiopian eunuch. They went all the way to India with St. Thomas.
Right.
And into the interiors, you know, with St. Andrew. And so they went.
And actually had good success in all those places.
Yeah,
like when
did,
you think about the Nestorian Christians later to the east.
Right, well, they went all the way to China. Right.
Yeah, right.
But this sense that the salvation and ultimate destiny and beatitude of the community of the human race is a common thing that is to be promoted by the church throughout the world is precisely a dogmatic defense for Catholics, at least, against any racial theories. The problem with racism, and we're talking now on the ideological plane, we're going to get to the questions of social justice in just a moment.
Okay.
But on the point of view of what we actually believe about human nature... the problem is that the theory of evolution with the survival of the fittest produced very many racist theories and tendencies from the 19th century on.
Yes.
You know, so our progressive friends need to realize that it was a new and largely anti-Christian or anti-revelation based notion which undermined universal faith in a common human nature and a common human destiny, thereby reducing man to the level of an evolving animal. And therefore, of course, it's obvious that from the merely bodily point of view, you can always make physical comparisons.
Yeah.
And since you're a materialist, you reduce the value and dignity of that being to their physical or material characteristics.
Yes.
And that is the essence of the type of natural racism which is professed, you know, everywhere.
And in general, today, the person who adheres to, you know, is a purely materialistic evolutionary biologist, that person is generally going to be tempered by the social progress.
Right.
They're going to say, no, that might be in the history, but that's not in the science. And that's fair enough. It's not there in the science.
But an evolutionary view of man provides absolutely no defense against... a racist distinction between humans of varying degrees of quality.
That's why I was saying that when you put the basis in revelation on our shared creation and redemption, it's much more solid anti-racist position than a scientific anti-racist position.
Right, and that's the Christian position of our revelation, but practically all religions have a teaching about human origins which emphasize some common origin for the whole human race.
Okay.
I mean, it's almost an intuitive awareness of human reason. I mean, that's why in the Declaration of Independence, of course, we have that all men are, this is self-evident.
Yeah.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Now, that self-evident has been long time ago eliminated by modern scientism and rejection of any notion of a divine origin for the human race.
Right.
So what was evident to the free-thinking rationalist Thomas Jefferson is not evident to the followers of various movements now.
No, because he believes in nature and nature's God.
Extreme right-wing racist or extreme left-wing progressives, they don't accept that account of human nature. And so the unifying force of our traditional documents, for example, is no longer there. It's at least suspect. Everything's suspect.
Well, is racism then, say a racist ideology of any kind, is it an error or is it a sin? How do you categorize it?
Well, this is very important because racism as an error would be, in the first place, an error against, and I'm talking about for a Catholic, right?
Yeah, yes.
An error against the revealed truth that men were created, human beings were created from a common source and therefore share a common destiny.
Ah, so it's an error against the faith, the concept of the faith.
It's a concept. It's an error against the faith.
Yeah.
Now, if it's as a sin, of course, that's if you take that error against the faith and you so embrace it that you deny the truth of the faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, call another race a different kind of animal. And, you know, you run across people that are like this.
Yeah.
But they may do that without a full intention of denying Christianity, but they do it. But the fact is, you're in very dangerous territory when you speak about other human beings as though they did not ultimately share the same nature that you do from the same source,
right,
with the same destiny. That's something we have to be always reminding ourselves of in order to maintain the respect and the charity to everyone, even people we don't like or people we avoid, people that have hurt us or frightened us or whatever. But we have to be conscious continually of our common humanity from our first parents and our common redeemed nature from the fall through Christ. That's the key.
Yeah.
So first of all, it's an error against the virtue of faith. But then secondly, and this is where we most of all see it, it's an error contrary to the virtue of justice.
Okay.
Justice is that virtue whereby our will is set to give to each one what is his due,
mm-hmm,
to be fair to all. It doesn't mean you treat everybody absolutely equally because, you know, you owe your mortgage company a lot more than you owe the gas station.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know,
you owe a lot more.
All right. Depends upon the kind of car you have, I guess.
I guess so, yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe your car costs as much as your house nowadays.
Some people, I suppose, that's true, yeah.
This is where we see racism in the more common sense, in the sense that among Catholics or among Christians, you rarely will find an ideological racist, as someone who actually is a racist to the point of denying the truths of the faith. Right.
Right.
That's not that common. And if they have to know that if they really deliberately do that, they've departed from the virtue of faith, which is a very serious matter.
Right.
Because they can't, it's a mortal sin.
I suppose Pope Pius said that about the Nazi. You can't be one of these racists and be a Catholic. In I'm thinking of, what was it, Mitt Brendan or
Zorga. Right. That's Pius XI.
Oh.
And Pius XII had also very firm words to say about it in general.
Yeah.
But that racism in the ideological sense and Catholicism are completely incompatible.
Completely incompatible.
Now,
yeah,
from the point of view of justice, the virtue of justice, whereby you render to each one his due, it's an interesting question because if you go to the sources of moral theology, for example, to St. Thomas mm-hmm. and his Summa in the second part mostly, or to St. Alphonsus or any of the great moral teachers, racism wasn't a category. They didn't have that word, you know.
No, they didn't know that, right.
The category racism only begins with modern scientific culture and a comparative evaluation of the different quote-unquote races. That's when it becomes a concept that was regarded in the beginning as justified by science. That's what we have. That's the whole birth control movement. It started with, you know, a desire to have eugenics and to produce better, you know, more fit human beings.
Right.
This whole ideology. That's why the Planned Parenthood in New York, you heard, they took Margaret Sanger's
name. They got rid
Sanger's
of Margaret name. Sanger because she's...
Right, right. But she was an outright, avid, drooling, frothing racist, you know. And
yeah, she was, without question.
But anyway, but of course, since she brought the wonderful benefits of...
of killing
birth
babies.
Control, babies. Well, no, she didn't even dream of that. I mean, that is beyond her. That's a later
that's right.
stage.
She was
not...
Contraception.
People back then were not that wicked, you know. That we would justify that. In any case, the racism is an error against justice is an error. So you have to look at the sources and see where it comes in. As a sin against justice, it's precisely a sin whereby, or an error which can lead to a sin, whereby one judges another human being rashly or by mere suspicion. and thereby deprives him of what is his due in virtue of his dignity on account of the differences of his ethnic or racial identity within the human race. So when you deny someone his due because of their ethnic or racial identity, then that's the sin of racism as against justice. And it seems to me, now there are different writers, but this is the way I resolved it, the type of injustice which is involved with racism is the so-called sin or error of judgment by suspicion, or what's called rash judgment. That is where you judge another for light reasons, that is not for weighty ones.
Yeah.
And in so doing, you deprive them of their due. Now, remember, a person has the right to your good opinion.
Oh, that's so interesting. I've never heard that phrase that way before.
You're not permitted to sin against another in thought just as long as you don't do anything bad to them.
Sorry, Nick. I'm just saying that because of my bad judgments.
Oh, see. Okay. All right. You're not permitted.
I apologize.
I can't imagine anyone doing that to Nick.
No.
Well, that's worse than racism. That's just particularized to a single person.
I know.
That's completely irrational.
Yes, I know.
Poor man.
I know. I'm a horrible person.
Well, I'm glad you're making this public confession now.
Yeah.
But when we based on slight indications, deprive another of what is his due.
Yeah.
Even in our thoughts, we have to struggle not to give in to it. Now, St. Thomas gives some interesting considerations about that regarding the different ways in which we might sin against justice by rash judgment against another for a light reason. A light reason being basically something accidental to human nature. And the color of our skin, our language, our particular cultural habits, all of these things, the historical relationship of my family or my group of families to your group of families, which is one way of looking at slavery, is that, you know, there's some families that abuse other families.
Yeah, that's right.
And all of those things are light reasons to judge someone compared to the fact of our common humanity and destiny in God. That is, those are not sufficient to judge someone evil or unworthy of just treatment, and therefore doing so is the beginning of a sin. That is, and St. Thomas says it very, very intelligently. He says that right here, I'll quote him for you exactly, if I can find my little... St. Thomas defines judgment by suspicion as evil thinking based on slight indications.
Yeah.
Right? And the first kind of judgment by suspicion, a rash judgment, is our own wickedness or our own sinful nature, what we would call now projection, where we're prone to think evil of others because we ourselves are not exactly good.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
And that's the first sort of category of racist wrong. That is when you have a passing tendency because of your own weaknesses, that is excessive fear, excessive anger,
You
know, all these things, that we have a tendency to begin to judge someone on account of his race or her race to be not worthy of respect in some way, or not worthy of his due in some way. But St. Thomas points out that that's at the beginnings of our consideration, and so it's a, he says, the first degree is when a man begins to doubt of another's goodness from slight indications. This is venial and a light sin, for it belongs to human temptation without which no man can go through this life. So we recognize that we will have random thoughts that are not...
charitable.
Not charitable, or not just.
Yeah, just,
but
right.
Not just, okay, especially.
Right. Yeah, that's more
but
important.
But that's a question of passing them by or pushing them away, or looking carefully at where they came from and saying, no, that's not right. And that's the beginning of a sinful, unjust racism. If you began to entertain those thoughts seriously, right, you might see some analogies here, seriously, so that you become convinced that the person has these evil qualities for reason of which you do not owe him or her that degree of respect, and this flows forth into a certain conviction or judgment, based on your passions, of course, not based upon reason. And then leads, of course, almost inevitably to unjust action if the occasion permits. This is a grave sin. It's a mortal sin. That is, if that becomes a settled conviction that you have deliberately entertained. Yeah. Now, you can see easily the comparison which people, Orthodox Catholics, recognize very well between impure thoughts that you give into and impure thoughts that you don't give into.
This is a kind of impure thought.
These are racist thoughts.
Yeah.
All right. Which you can have, and it's not that big a deal. But if you entertain them to the point where you're actually consenting to them, their content,
then finding
reasons in yourself whereby these things are justified, it's the same logic in the man that's being tempted to indulge in impure thoughts. You know, first you notice and you go try to bash it away. Then you start going, well, it's kind of, well,
And then you build a habit too.
Right, a habit of evil thoughts. And this this could be a grave sin. And as St. Thomas says, he says, if we cannot avoid suspicions because we are human, it's just a human nature, rash judgment because we're human. We must nevertheless restrain our judgment and refrain from forming a definite and fixed opinion. And so if you have definite and fixed opinions about people
of another
particular
race,
ethnicities or races, that are, we're talking about things that are negative or uncharitable, especially, that would lead you to tend to deprive them of what's their due, to treat them unjustly or to speak of them unjustly, then this is a grave sin.
Yeah.
Now, that's just the development out of the passing thought.
Yeah.
So, the third stage is even worse when those particular convictions become enshrined in actual legal activity. That is, when a judge deprives someone of what is that person's due on account of their race or ethnicity. Now, in St. Thomas's time, a judge was anybody that had an office in society. They didn't have the separation of powers like we have.
Right, right.
And so that means a police officer. It means it means a legislator. It means a judge on a court bench. It means, and in the church, it means, you know, everyone from the Pope all the way down to the parish priest.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody in church or state that has real power over someone else, legal jurisdiction, they're a judge.
Yeah.
And so that's the worst and most offensive example of it, because these people have care of the common good.
Yeah.
And so the outrage is, of course, on the part of people who see things clearly, is all the greater. And their sorrow when people who are in positions of having the disposition of justice over other people treat them unjustly for this rash reason of simply their race or ethnicity. So that's why St. Thomas says we restrain our judgment and refrain from forming a definite and fixed opinion. And that way we'll also avoid the extremity of that, a society in which even the instruments of justice are used unjustly against persons because of their ethnicity or race, like you hear about the lynchings and that kind of thing, where they actually don't even observe the norms of law, where it becomes even that extreme.
But you could also have a situation where a judge might impose harsher penalties on, say, black teenagers than white teenagers, mm-hmm. because the judge has internalized the idea that, well, they're worse people. I mean,
this goes in the direction of what they talk about as systemic racism, which if the judge isn't conscious of that,
it's unjust, but not necessarily a sin.
Well, it's not necessarily as grave as if he's saying, I'm putting you away longer because you're black.
Yeah.
But the problem is people don't want to confront such ugly motivations, and so they tend to kind of push them aside.
Yeah.
Just like when they're tempted to commit adultery, you know, they just sort of forget about how bad it is.
Yeah.
You know, for
right.
the moment.
Otherwise,
you know,
it would really,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I really need this right now. I'm on a business trip, you know, that kind of attitude. that's it's the same. Yeah. We justify our sinful actions because we've already entertained them in our thoughts. But this...
Yes, I see what you mean.
But this aspect of... Now, there is a problem here, though, because people would say, well wait a minute now. I tell my kids not to go through X neighborhood unaccompanied.
Yeah.
Now, that's because I'm afraid of what might happen to them. Is that a racist judgment, a rash judgment based on suspicion? Because it's a neighborhood of a particular race, I don't want them to go through. Because in those neighborhoods... often things bad happen. Well, St. Thomas says that this is what's called a judgment by supposition. Namely, it's not by suspicion or rash judgment. It's a judgment made in order to prevent an evil, not to cause an injustice.
Yeah.
So you know that very often crimes are committed in this neighborhood, so you don't want your kids walking around in it.
Yeah.
And actually, in our culture, that applies to both white and black parents, because black parents tell their teenage boys, don't go walking through a white neighborhood all by yourself.
And that's
and
not
certainly
sinful.
Don't run.
Yeah.
And that's not a sin.
No,
they're protecting them. They're protecting them from an evil of being exposed to actually being exposed to that racism, which would be an evil. So there are, or, you know, you keep guns in the cabinet, or, you know, have other things that you do to defend your home or whatever.
Right.
Those are, when we make judgments that are based on a supposition in order to prevent an evil, that's not the same thing as rash judgment.
Yeah, right.
And so, although it might look the same, you know, but, and I think people of various races, they, knowing the particular difficulties or vices to which groups of people are more commonly exposed, they will give such kinds of advice. But the motive there is not racism, it's protection from a possible evil.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. Although it could have a fuzzy line there.
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, there's some things where you do have some positive obligation over time to try to wear down those things that make that neighborhood inaccessible to people of your skin color. Like when you can, and in a safe and prudent way, patronize that neighborhood, go to its restaurants or its stores, you should, because you do have a positive obligation to try to break down what is in fact an evil situation.
Yeah, you have a relative obligation to do that to the extent to which your duties and circumstances permit.
Make possible.
But it's very important. For example, the redlining that happened after World War II, that was just absolutely immoral.
Right.
You know? Or the exclusion of freed slaves from the grants of land in the West,
right
when they were all farmers, you know.
Yeah.
These are acts of clear injustice based simply upon the race and ethnicity of these people. That is a sin of racism.
Yeah.
You know, that's clear.
And that's what built the American suburbs after the Second World War.
But it was even worse because they wanted to prevent them from having a status in society that would give them real political control. Because if you have money, you've got power. So there are examples of institutionalized racism which are real.
Yes, I see what you're saying.
But those have to be dismantled, but in a way which maintains also the dignity of those who are on the, you might say, advantage side of that equation. That is, it's also not fair just to blanket an entire population with a label of hate and injustice when they may be quite willing to do what they can to overcome that.
Let me put it to you this way too, though. Like an ethnic neighborhood, for example, is not necessarily an evil. As a matter of fact, it could very well be a good. Like you have Koreatown or Chinatown in LA or something. This is not an evil thing. The existence of these places where people live with people of the same culture. I don't know.
Language,
race,
too.
And language, right.
Well, I mean, it happens fairly naturally, but it needs to be something that happens freely.
Okay,
I mean, it has to be freely. It can't be imposed by the state. It's imposed by the bonds of, you know, we're closest to those we're closest to. It's the same the same with patriotism or anything like that, or our love for our own family more than other families. I mean, that's natural. But that's not the source of an injustice to somebody else, you know. And so it's a different thing. I mean, it could be the origin. Given our fallen nature, any good thing can be turned to something evil.
That's a good point.
We have to be rather balanced in our consideration. So Pius the 12th, in 1939, right after he was elected, he published his first encyclical. Just as Germany was about to invade Poland and start World War II, in which he said the principal error today is the error that denies the common origins and destiny of the human race. He started off with that, and he made it very, very clear that he even says, after the manner of Thomas Jefferson, the first of these pernicious, or rather Yeah. The first of these pernicious errors widespread today is the forgetfulness of that law of human solidarity and charity, which is dictated and imposed by our common origin and by the equality of rational nature in all men to whatever people they belong, and by the redeeming sacrifice offered by Jesus Christ on the altar of the cross to his heavenly Father on behalf of sinful mankind. So he says that right away.
That was just right
before the invasion of Poland.
Yeah.
And he actually ends the encyclical with a little appeal for Poland. Not there was much he could do, but an equality of rational nature. And that's where Jefferson got the idea of all men being created equal, you know, through revelation. He may not have acknowledged it at that point, but then but this is in view of the unity of mankind. So it's not just individuals with individual dignity. It's a unity of humankind as a whole. And that's very, very important. But he distinguishes some nations are better off than others. And the nations, he says, despite a difference of development due to diverse conditions of life and of culture, are not destined to break the unity of the human race, but rather to enrich and embellish it by sharing their own peculiar gifts, and that by reciprocal interchange of goods, which can be possible and efficacious only when a mutual love and lively sense of charity unite all the sons of the same Father and all those redeemed by the same divine blood. So people may live in different neighborhoods, but I don't think anybody who went to an Italian restaurant in an Italian neighborhood was unwelcome. And I don't think anyone who went to Korean barbecue in Koreatown was unwelcome.
Yes. Right.
And I mean, you know what I mean? And that's not just an economic thing. It's just that people like to share the good things that they have to share.
Yeah.
And they know where to get them. So,
although I will say this, in the United States, black people have suffered a particular onerous burden in this regard, in that you couldn't eat in certain restaurants. You really were denied the goods that everyone else shared.
We had institutionalized or customary segregation, and we practically do today.
Yeah. It really does seem that in America, there is a special, I don't know what to call it, but a special category of intense injustice against black people in America.
If not intense, extensive,
yeah,
low grade and constant.
It's chronic.
It's not like because nobody, you know, people that would never intend to be particularly cruel or really deprive someone of their fundamental rights,
right,
might still be clueless about certain things that are, you know,
yeah, fair enough.
And so one has to examine that and resist it in a way which is effective. And that, of course, has to do more with one's own people than the other people. That is about how we act around other people of our own race regarding other races. That's more. Now, some people say, well, Father, what about ethnic humor? You know, this is a big one. You know, people always, what about ethnic humor? Because that's supposed to be completely off the table.
I think that's a terrible, myself, I think that's a terrible mistake.
Well,
equating that with racism is...
Right, well, this is the problem, is it isn't. It can be.
It can be, sure. You said any good thing can be.
You can tell by the quality of the humor, if it's really disgusting and demeaning, that's one thing. But if it's simply recognizing the quirks, or, you know, like they're actors who are experts in accents, or, you know, for example, the traditional cartoons would never have had any humor at all if they didn't have people who were able to talk in every conceivable sort of way,
right,
meaning accents which indicated all kinds of human differences of sex, age, intelligence,
right,
ethnicity, everything. Now, granted, there's stereotypes. Stereotypes can be very damaging.
Yes.
But they can also be signs of affection, you know, at a certain point.
Well, don't you?
And that's why in our particular problem today is that whole lighter side of the recognition of differences has just been completely obliterated from view.
But in a place like New York City, for example, Jews, Italians, Irish, and, you know, all these groups, they lived right on top of one another. They knew one another.
Literally in the same apartment building.
Yeah, so this kind of joking around was of a different thing than it is now. But I still will say that humor that makes fun of black people in the United States is different. It's of a different order because of all those people, the Jews and the Italians and the Irish and I'm trying to think of all the groups, but you name them, the Poles and whatever. The one group that was particularly excluded is black Americans.
Yeah, and this is the difficulty is if it's ethnic humor among groups that are proportionately equal to each other.
Yeah, social. And have an affection for one
right,
another.
Right, an affection. Yeah. But with humor that has to do with difference in race, precisely, there can be...
There's a different level of meanness.
The inference that it's disrespectful. Right. One of the problems with the humor surrounding, because there's lots of humor surrounding Jews. They did it in the Catskills and all over. And
they say it's a survival skill.
And
a lot
know,
of
right, right.
A lot of
they,
Jewish
they know yeah. all of that, and they joke about themselves all the time.
Right.
Although they're on a fine line, because they also know the evil of anti-Semitism and how dangerous it is.
Right.
Or has been in history, and yet they don't avoid. Making fun of their own stereotypes.
Yeah.
They don't do that. But again, it's the spirit in which it's offered. But in the case of blacks, of course, one of the things was that the humor, they themselves were put in the position of acting out stereotypes of their ethnicity.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, right. Like the first Academy Award went to that lady that played
Mammy, what was her name?
In the
you're from the Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, Gone with the Wind. I'm trying to remember.
She's a wonderful actress, but right. She's forced to play a part.
And she got an Academy Award, but she had to sit in a table by herself.
Oh God, I didn't know that.
At the awards dinner. Yeah.
Of course,
that was in L.A. By the way, back then that was Hollywood.
What?
But in any case, they were particularly put in the position of having to play the buffoon or play the fool. And nobody minds an old stereotype that actually corresponds to something that exists in history. And there are very many writings that, for example, Uncle Tom's Cabin, which, you know, helped tremendously the
abolition.
Hattie, right.
McDaniel.
Yeah. Hattie McDaniel. That helped the abolitionist movement. It was full of these stereotypes, right? And they were second nature. So now it's more a question of sensitivity to, I think it's more a question of sensitivity to persons in general who just regard this, it's like smoking, as just being absolutely, completely, you know, bad.
Right.
And it'll take a long time before anybody ever thinks of that kind of humor as being mild.
It's the old thing about forbidden fruit, though.
Right,
like,
right.
There's a self-defeating quality to that. Mm-hmm. If you don't let people have any fun... then they're going to think racism is fun in a way. I mean, in a certain way. Do you see what I mean? That,
right.
That if you don't let people just talk and...
Well, the thing is, if you don't have to jump on it and demonize it immediately the moment you suspect that there may be something there.
Right.
You have to wait to form a judgment, because the question here is treating people justly.
Okay.
And so you can be just as mean and unfair in judging someone else to be an evil racist when he's not.
Yeah.
Based on slight indications, which you haven't investigated, then someone else could be, in being a racist, truly judging the person's character to be inferior and unworthy of respect based on slight indications. That is, what we're concerned about here is justice. And the fact that you belong to an ethnicity that was enslaved, or an ethnicity that was enslaving, doesn't mean that you are now deprived of your right to be treated justly. Both have to be treated justly.
Yes.
And the Old Testament's full of that. It goes on about how it's important to show justice to the poor and oppressed, but then it also says judges should not favor the poor over the rich unless it's a question of justice.
Yeah.
So leaving out that ideological sympathy side of it, but just what's the actual case of things. In the scriptures, there's so many examples of what we regard as ethnically unacceptable. Our Lord prefers his own people to other peoples. Well,
of course,
he's the God who chose the Jews, the Hebrews, before all other nations, just because he preferred them.
Yeah.
Okay. And he weeps over the destruction of Jerusalem as for no other place, even though many other cities would be destroyed.
Sure.
And then when the Syrophoenician woman comes up to him and asks him to heal her daughter, he says, I've come only for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And she was a Greek-speaking pagan. And she responds, sir, even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from their master's table.
Yeah.
And then he, pulling that out of her, heals her daughter. Now, that's an example of a totally non-politically correct interchange.
Yeah.
Where our Lord says, no, I don't help Gentiles.
Yeah,
thank you. I
right.
help.
We don't
only
serve your
the
kind
Jews.
Here.
I don't. I'm not. I wasn't. Actually, what he says very precisely is, I was sent.
Yes, right. That's
and that's true.
Yeah.
And what he was doing is trying to teach the fact that it's first to the Jews, because he wants to direct them towards the true religion of the one God of the Old Testament, so as to stir up faith in this woman, so that the healing can come about by a faith in the true God, and not just treating Jesus like he's a shaman or a magician or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he had that intention, but the form was perfectly well understood at the time, because the ethnic differences in the Middle East, of course, as everybody knows, are of tremendous importance. And they're not just racial, they're also tribal and everything else. So there are a lot of delicate areas, but the main thing is that every Catholic needs to make that profession of faith in God the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, and Jesus Christ, through whom all things and all persons were made, and in the universal salvation wrought by Christ for every single person. And so, in view of our common origin and destiny, to be resolved to treat justly in our judgments, our thoughts, it is, in our words and in our deeds, everyone with whom we come in contact. And that if we find in ourselves a tendency to react unjustly, we have to examine it and put it aside, just like any other impure thought. So
beautiful.
Right. That's what we need to do.
All right.
And the rest of it, there's a lot more to talk about, but that's all the difficult political stuff.
You should publish an article on this.
Maybe so. Maybe we will.
Yeah, in Catholic Answers Magazine.
I think so. That might be a good idea.
All right. Father, as always, thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think that the putting us on solid ground of the unity of the Catholic, of the human race in both creation and in the order of creation and the order of redemption, that's the solid basis on which we overcome racism.
Yeah, and the personal conviction to behave justly, to give to each his due.
Yeah,
well, insofar as we're able,
okay,
or due.
Father Hugh Barber, thanks.
You're very welcome.
In almost every moral or social issue, if you get the basics right, then you know how to proceed. And if you get the basics wrong, no matter how much you work and work and work, you're going to just make the problem worse. So we really do have to get the basics right about racism, and that comes down to getting right the story of what a human person is, of where the human person comes from, about what society is, and about what it means to sin and be redeemed from sin. When we get those things right, then we're on the path to getting serious, grave social issues such as racism right. When we get them wrong, we are we're going to be spinning our wheels. And worse than spinning our wheels, we're going to be hurting one another. So thanks for joining us. We always appreciate it when you join us here on Catholic Answers Focus. You can email us if you like. We're available at our email address, focus@catholic.com. We want to hear from you. We'd love ideas on future episodes if you've got them. As I said at the beginning, subscribe to Focus so you'll be updated and notified when new episodes are available. And Zach, his job depends on, if you're watching this on YouTube, that you like and subscribe. All right, that's all I'm going to say. If you don't like Zach, then don't do it. But if you have any feelings for Zach, like and describe the show. Also, if you want to give to us, and we do need you to give to us because we need to pay for the production of these episodes, go to givecatholic.com. Once again, I'm Cy Kellett, your host. This has been Catholic Answers Focus. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here.